purport. Vedic astronomers of 5,000 years ago could predict eclipses of the sun and the moon just as well as our modern astronomers can. The knowledge of the ancient astronomers went much further, however, since they understood the karmic influence of such events. Solar and lunar eclipses are generally very inauspicious, with certain rare exceptions. But just as the otherwise inauspicious Ekadashi day becomes beneficial when used for the glorification of Lord Hari, so the time of an eclipse is also advantageous for fasting and worship. The holy pilgrimage site known as Samanta Panchaka is located at Kurukshetra, the sacred ground of the Kurus, where the Kuru king's predecessors performed many Vedic sacrifices. The Kurus were thus advised by learned Brahmanas that this would be the best place for them to observe vows during the eclipse. Long before their time, Lord Parshuram had done penance at Kurukshetra to atone for his killings. Samanta Panchaka, the five ponds he dug there were still present at the end of Dwapar Yuga as they are even today. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsha Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So yesterday His Holiness Jayadev Swami Maharaj brought out very nicely about the various aspects of chronology in Srimad Bhagavatam and explained that chronologically this particular pastime where it is being described in the Srimad Bhagavatam is not actually happened, it didn't happen at that time. It had happened at a different time. But still, as we have heard umpteen number of times in various Srimad Bhagavatam classes by so many devotees, that this particular discussion or this particular narration of Srimad Bhagavatam by Srila Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj is not just armchair philosophical discussion between two individuals who have nothing to do and they want to spend an afternoon or a few days just discussing something. As we all know, Parikshit Maharaj was cursed to die within 7 days, and he took this opportunity to actually hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now when we are like almost towards the end of the 10th canto, we can understand that of these 7 days, almost 5 days have passed. So every word that comes out of the lotus lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami has to have some relevance. So if he has chosen to speak about this pastime at this particular juncture, it's not just, okay, he has run out of topics and let me, okay, fillers, like we have in, you know, modern day entertainment. Okay, now we don't have anything to put on the stage or on the screen, so let us put some fillers. It is not a filler. So having said that, in the purport, some interesting points have been made here. Initially, it begins with the astronomy. Vedic astronomers of 5,000 years ago could predict eclipses of the sun and the moon. Not just, I mean, the time factor as we know. Modern science, the calculation of time factor, and what is given in our Vedic scriptures. Modern science, just in recent years, even their standards keep changing. Right now, the basic unit of time as we know, according to modern science, is defined by something which are known as the atomic clocks. Defined by the frequency of vibration of the atoms, the components of the atoms. That's how the time is defined. That's the basic unit. Now, before the atomic age arrived, the standard was different. Before science could understand, oh, there is some unit of matter which is known as atom, that was not this. And in future, as technology progresses, it might change even further. There is no one standard set. And this may be on the, you know, definition of on the micro level, what is the smallest unit of time. But on the macro level, they absolutely have no idea what is the largest unit of time or what is the largest scale of time that exists. They are still trying to find out by means of exploring the universe and trying to find out how old is this universe. They have absolutely no idea. It's just, you know, shooting in the dark. Or in Hindi, as they say, tukka maar rahe. Lag gaya to lag gaya. So if they find somebody gullible enough to accept it, okay, it passes off as gospel truth. Otherwise, if somebody questions, then they say, okay, we are still searching for answers. But in the scriptures, the time that has been described is mind-boggling. I mean, we cannot even imagine. It's defined precisely from the smallest unit of time to, I mean, when we generally when we do certain sanskaras, we have to take sankalpa. So when we do the sankalpa, we have to precisely describe what we are performing. And not just describe what we are performing, but we have to precisely describe in what period of time and in what geographical tract of land are we, exactly which spot according to geography. I mean, they have lat long, you know, coordinates nowadays according to GPS. Everybody has their own. India is also launching satellites to create its own form of GPS. Then Russia has its own GLONASS, and GPS is the American satellites. So everybody gives lat long coordinates to pinpoint every point of, you know, every place on earth. But if we see our Vedic scriptures, you can exactly describe every place on this earth geographically, and according to time, time-space representation is very accurate. So those who have understanding of this sankalpa, we give such a fantastic, exactly which kalpa is happening, what is the kalpa, it escapes my mind, but 28th manvantara, and it goes so deep. How many manvantaras? This is the 28th manvantara, and this is the first pada, pratama pade. Everything so deep. So right from macro time to micro time is clearly there. If anybody wants more details about how it is defined, we can meet after the class. Otherwise, this whole class can go on just for this. So Vedic astronomers, because that is the first step in astronomy. You have to be able to clearly define time. Otherwise, you cannot calculate anything. That's the first thing in astronomy. If you don't know your time, you know, you cannot calculate. It's all like if any of you have had this experience of having your horoscope chart made. So one of the primary inputs that the person who is making the horoscope chart needs is the time of birth. The date of birth and the time of birth, specific. And then, next thing is the place of birth. So it's a very clear-cut space-time definition, which, why they need that is, they want to calculate, actually what is the representation on the horoscope chart, what is it? It's nothing but the position of the stars and the different constellations in the sky at that particular place, at that particular instant of time. That's what is represented in a pictorial form. That's all. So how do they come to that conclusion? Because they can do this because Vedic astronomy is much, much more advanced. It's all very clearly defined how each planet and how each star moves. And accordingly, if they have the exact time of birth, date of birth and place of birth, they can draw the horoscope chart. So similarly, from the horoscope chart, somebody who is a qualified astronomer, they could predict the position of the, they could say what would be the position of the, for us, you know, laymen, it seems quite difficult. But even when you use softwares like GCAL, which has been designed by devotees within ISKCON, specifically I know Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who is Prabhupada's disciple, the astrologer. They have put all that information and knowledge in a software format. So for us, we just put the time, date, and then, you know, that software says calculation in progress. And then suddenly it spews out all the information. Everything comes out. And we say, how this came out? But they have painstakingly put it into a software program so that we can use it and we can see all those information. So Vedic astronomers could predict eclipses of the sun and the moon just as well. See, in today's modern astronomy, especially when scientists use this particular field of modern astronomy, they have huge databases of all the previous recorded instances of eclipses and these past eclipses, and they have mathematical models. They calculate the path of the sun and the moon and all those things, and accordingly they can predict. So it requires a lot of computational power. But even Vedic astronomers, without any supercomputers, without computers, they could easily say, when is the next solar eclipse coming up? When is the next lunar eclipse coming up? It is very clearly. So the knowledge of the ancient astronomers went much further than just predicting this. Why? Because they could also understand the karmic influences of such events. How it influences, how a solar eclipse, like traditionally in India, a solar eclipse or a lunar eclipse, like I see this, generally when such events occur, you know, lunar eclipse or a solar eclipse or a transit, like recently there was a transit of the Mercury across the sun, Mercury across the sun. So there are many, for the modern astronomer, it is just, you know, movement of some celestial bodies, that's all. and it's some sort of a celestial spectacle to be observed by everyone. So whenever there is a solar eclipse or lunar eclipse or this kind of transits of Mercury across the sun, then all these NASA and all these various institutions, they have places where we can go and observe these events happening. You know, you can observe the solar eclipse. They'll arrange to you to have it projected on a screen, and then you see it. It's seen as, you know, just something to see and experience. That's all. There's nothing more deeper connected to it. Whereas the Vedic astronomers, they understood that actually there is something more deeper connected to such particular events. There are certain karmic influences connected. And we know that actually the solar eclipse and the lunar eclipse happens according to geography and modern science because of the juxtaposition of the sun, earth and moon. But we know it because Rahu was not allowed to partake of the nectar, therefore, and especially he was pointed out by the sun and the moon. So therefore, over certain times, he actually casts his malefic influence upon these particular planets, sun and the moon, and their light is covered. So this particular planet Rahu is actually a malefic influence, and it is understood that it is a period of inauspiciousness during solar eclipse and lunar eclipse. And therefore, traditionally in India, people would observe these particular incidents, these particular events, by performing certain activities which would actually nullify the effect of such inauspiciousness. So we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita that when Lord Mahaprabhu, he appeared at the time of a lunar eclipse. So that particular appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu itself indicated the mission for which he was adventing. And that was to spread the glories of the holy name. So everybody at that time in Navadvip was bathing in the holy river Ganges and loudly chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So therefore, this particular holy pilgrimage site, again it is described about Kurukshetra. Now when I read about this particular, in the purport about Kurukshetra, one particular event, I was reminded of one particular event which happened with us. I mean, I was traveling from Chandigarh to New Delhi with His Grace Gaurang Prabhu. And typically when Gaurang Prabhu travels, he's in transit between two points. He is always totally absorbed in books. Whether he's flying, whether he's traveling by train, as soon as the vehicle, whether it is a train or a plane, it starts moving, he opens his books and he's absorbed. And just 10 minutes before getting down, everything goes back into the bag and he's ready to disembark. That's how he travels. I have traveled with him, flights, on train, everywhere I have seen, this is the way he travels. So when we got on at Chandigarh, this was a limited stop train, so there were only 3 stops between Chandigarh and New Delhi. First was Ambala Canton, second was Kurukshetra, third was Panipat, and the fourth station was New Delhi. So we got on at Chandigarh, the train stopped at Ambala Cant. When it stopped at Ambala Cant, on the public address system within the train, there was an announcement made. So this station is Ambala Cantonment. And this is the, they started describing about Ambala. So this is the largest Air Force station in northern India. And is the first line of defense of India against Pakistan. And so on and on and on. For 3 minutes almost, there was description about what is Ambala Cant. So then Prabhuji was absorbed in his books and I was just like, you know, spacing out. So I heard, okay, this is the announcement. Then train came to Kurukshetra. At the Kurukshetra, so then they said, like they say in Mumbai local trains, next station, whatever. So similarly they said, next station, Kurukshetra. And then when train stopped at Kurukshetra, this is Kurukshetra railway station. That's all. Nothing more. And then the train started moving, then the next halt was Panipat. So when the train stopped at Panipat, so they said, this is Panipat railway station. This is the site where the massive war between Marathas and the forces of the Rohillas was fought, and in one day 1 lakh people were killed, and so on and so blah, 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 blah. They just went on for 2-3 minutes. The entire Maratha kingdom was destroyed by this one war of Panipat and all that thing. So after that was over, Gauram Prabhu said, this is amazing. And I said, I thought, what is amazing? Because I was seeing that he is reading his books. So I thought maybe he is saying something from the book. But suddenly he said, when it comes to Ambala Cant, they have 3 minutes of description about Ambala Cant. When it comes to Panipat, which is like, you know, which is like the biggest obstacle between for Pakistan in an India-Pakistan war. And when it comes to Panipat, they are talking about the Maratha war, the war of Panipat and all those things. But when it comes to Kurukshetra, which will dwarf any of these wars in terms of number of people killed, they have nothing to say about it. So I was like, wow, I mean, Prabhuji is in his books, but he is so conscious of what is happening around him, and he is connecting it to, you know, how we should understand these things. So I was wondering this particular event when I read that it is so easy for us, like Prabhupada many times in his books, in his lectures, we have heard Prabhupada says that Kurukshetra, there is actually, even now there is one Kurukshetra railway station. You can go there from New Delhi. If you take a train, it is 170 kilometers north of New Delhi. He describes it very clearly. You know, so that to give it a very authentic, it's not some fictitious place, not some myth conjured up in the books. No, it's actually a physical reality present even in current day India. So this particular holy pilgrimage site, how this particular place came to be called as Kurukshetra. So I was trying to find out, and I came across two versions. But the theme actually in both the versions is the similar. So the theme is that in Vaman Puran it says that the ancestor of both the Kauravas and the Pandavas, this king called Kuru, he offered his different parts of his body to Vishnu as seeds in order to cultivate this land, this tract of land, and make it fertile. And that is how this place came to be known as Kurukshetra. If you go into more detail, actually when King Kuru came to this particular place, he came on a golden chariot which was magically transformed into a plow. And he yoked this plow to Lord Shiva's Nandi and the buffalo of Lord Yama, Yamaraj. And he started to till the land. So Lord Vishnu, he descended and he asked Kuru to sow the virtues of mankind. And how Kuru did this was, he shred his arm, right arm, with the Vishnu's Sudarshan Chakra, and he planted all those 1,000 parts. So therefore Vishnu granted him 2 boons. He said that this tract of land will be named after you. That's how it came to be called Kurukshetra. And anyone who would die here, and in this tract of land, would straight go back to Godhead. And any pious credits, which any pious activities which were performed in this tract of land, would give the performer 1,000 times benefit than if it would perform at some other place. So because King Kuru planted, he actually sacrificed his own body to plant these seeds of virtue. Therefore, this place is known as Kurukshetra. So therefore, this particular verse that we are reading today, where it describes that many people, knowing of this eclipse in advance, many people went to the holy place in order to earn pious credits. So we can understand that this is a very important verse, you know, in the sense that one of the main underlying principles of Srimad Bhagavatam is to understand what is meant by prayaschit, or actually what is meant by the process by which, what is the process by which one can purify one's existence. Like in Vedic society, there are four primary goals that every individual is expected to pursue: dharma, artha, kama and moksha. So it was understood in the Vedic society that as long as we are within this material world, we will always encounter some auspiciousness or some inauspiciousness. So in order to purify one's existence, the Vedic system recommends the performance of various activities which are known as prayaschitta. Now, it's not like, you know, something which is rare. Basically, it is an activity which is performed to purify one's existence. So even we see, even it's not just like, you know, in India, even if we see, if we go to Western countries, even, you know, when a person has died, he has left his body, at the funeral, it's not just they dig a hole and they put the body and that's it. At the funeral, there is a priest and there is a memorial service, and the priest invokes auspiciousness, you know, and he prays for the particular soul. So therefore, in every society there are different, like we have this concept of fasting on Ekadashi in India, you know, or I mean specifically for Vaishnavas, we fast on Ekadashi. But in India, if you ask every person, you know, I am sure every person who follows the Hindu faith, he fasts at least once a week. Maybe not the whole day, you know, somebody has fasting on Monday, somebody fasts on Tuesday, depending on wherever their faith is reposed, they have their particular days of fast, fasting on different days. So therefore, what is this fasting? You know, it's not just like some sort of a diet regime that they have imposed upon themselves. It's not a diet. Fasting, I mean, I always like this particular definition which His Grace Dwarkadish Prabhu spoke during one of the Pandav Nirjal Ekadashi classes. He says fasting means, it's not just, you know, on Ekadashi, it's not just fasting, or on any fast day, it's not just fasting. We fast, but we actually, what are we fasting from? The fast is for the material senses, for our tongue, for our eyes, you know. The material tongue, material eyes which like to see nice things, it is a fast, it's a day of fast. We like to eat indiscriminately, like to eat very palatable food. So for all those, materially it's a fasting day. But spiritually it is supposed to be a feasting day. So our tongue should chant more, and if at all we have to taste more, because why, I mean, somebody might say, yeah, if it is fast, if it is feasting day for the tongue, so let us have more Mahaprasad, come on. Okay, but then the concept is that if you have to eat, then you have to spend time in, you know, that eating, and after you eat a heavy meal, then it makes you drowsy, so it don't allow you. So the feasting is more on the chanting of the holy name side. We try to minimize food intake. Now somebody might ask, why this particular abstention from grains? Why grains? So there is a very nice story from the Padma Puran which talks about this particular day of Ekadashi. So this particular, actually when the Lord created this entire material creation, so He also created one particular entity is known as the Papa Purush, that means the personification of all sinful activities. So He was personified, every part of His body, every limb of His body was created out of the reaction of some sinful activity. So all the sinful activities, whatever every living entity in this world could perform, all of them put together in a personified form. This person was created by the, also was created by the Lord. And whenever anybody would perform any of this sinful activity, any sinful activity, then this person would make their life miserable, the Papa Purush. So one time, the Lord went to the abode of Yamraj, and when he was there, Yamraj immediately got up, he washed his feet, and he gave a very nice seat for him to sit, and he was serving the Lord very nicely, but the Lord heard a very loud cries. You know, he heard very loud cries from the southern direction. So he inquired from Yamraj, "What is this noise that I am hearing?" So Yamraj told him, "Actually, these are the people who have been condemned to come to these hellish planets because of the sinful activities that they have performed." So when the Lord, he went towards the southern direction, and when he saw the suffering that all these living entities were going through, so just thinking about how he could alleviate their suffering, just thinking about that, from within the body of the Lord, one personality was created. And that personality was the personification of the lunar date of Ekadashi. So then the Lord said that whoever observes the Ekadashi Vrata properly, they can go back home, back to Godhead. So immediately all the living entities who were suffering in the hellish planets and even within this earthly planet, they started performing very strictly, they started performing Ekadashi Vrata. So then everybody is starting to go back home, back to Godhead. So this Papa Purush, he had nothing to do. Nobody was there for him to, you know, trouble. So he was starting to feel weak. So then he immediately came and fell at the lotus feet of the Lord and said, he took shelter and he said, "See, if you do this, then what is the future, what is the hope for me? I don't have anything to do. Everybody is following Ekadashi Vrata." So then the Lord said, he said that, "I don't fear anything but this personality Ekadashi that you have created. And because of this personality Ekadashi, my existence is threatened." So Lord said, "Don't fear." I said, "For you, I will create this particular one, you know, one condition. You, on the day of Ekadashi, can reside in grains. So on the day of Ekadashi, anybody who eats grains, they will be condemned of all sinful reactions. They will be defenseless against you. So therefore, you take shelter of grains." So therefore, on this day of Ekadashi, for Vaishnavas, it is said that we don't eat grains. So that is the reason we don't eat grains on Ekadashi. Similarly, so many people in India, maybe they may not follow Ekadashi Vrata, but they have their own variations of different Vratas. So this is the process of Prayaschitta. And even in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that one who neither rejoices nor grieves, one who neither laments nor desires, and one who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. And of course, the very famous part about the four types of pious people who surrender to Krishna. So Krishna says that they are pious. Typically we will say, how come they are pious? You know, they are coming because they want something. It's not something which is totally free from any ulterior motives. They have some other motive actually. That is why they are coming to Krishna. But still Krishna classifies them as pious. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukriti no arjuna. So even though they have some ulterior motives, someone is distressed, so he wants relief from distress, or somebody wants some monetary or wealth, or somebody wants just, he is inquisitive, wants to know more, so he wants knowledge. So whatever be their motive, Krishna still calls them as pious, because they are approaching him. They don't go anywhere else. And by approaching Lord Krishna, even though initially their desire is for something else, slowly all their other desires are washed off, and then they come to the proper understanding of why they should approach Krishna for. That is why even Bhagavatam we have this. అకామో సర్వకామో వా మోక్షకామ ఉదారది తీవ్రేణ భక్తి యోగేన యజేత పురుష పదం. సో వెదర్ యువర్ డిజైర్ ఈస్ ఫార్ సమ్ మటీరియల్ బెనిఫిట్ ఆర్ ఫార్ సమ్ అదర్ థింగ్స్, ద బేసిక్ అండర్స్టాండింగ్ ఈస్ దట్ వీ హ్యావ్ టు అప్రోచ్ కృష్ణ. సో ఇన్ దిస్ మటీరియల్ వరల్డ్ వీ హ్యావ్ టు అప్రోచ్ కృష్ణ అండ్ దిస్ పర్టిక్యులర్ మెథడ్ టు అప్రోచ్ కృష్ణ హ్యాస్ బీన్ సో మచ్ సింప్లిఫైడ్ ఫార్ అస్ బై త్రూ దిస్ భాగవతం బై శిల ప్రభుపాద్. అదర్వైజ్ ఐ మీన్ ఈవెన్ దో వీ మైట్ బి వర్షిపింగ్ లార్డ్ కృష్ణ, వీ మైట్ బి విజిటింగ్ సమ్ టెంపుల్స్ ఆఫ్ లార్డ్ కృష్ణ, బట్ వీ మైట్ నాట్ బి అవేర్ ఆఫ్ యాక్చువల్లీ హౌ టు సరెండర్ టు కృష్ణ, హౌ టు యాక్చువల్లీ అండర్స్టాండ్ దిస్ వర్స్ ఆఫ్ సర్వధర్మాన్ పరిత్యజ్య మామేకం శరణం వ్రజ. సో ఇట్స్ నాట్ సో ఈజీ, బట్ ఇట్ హ్యాస్ బీన్ మేడ్ ఈజీ. అండ్ నాట్ జస్ట్ ఇట్ హ్యాస్ బీన్ మేడ్ ఈజీ, ఇట్ హ్యాస్ బీన్ మేడ్ యాక్సెసిబుల్. యూనో అదర్వైజ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ లైక్ యూనో ఫస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ హూ హ్యాస్ ది టైమ్ టు సిట్ అండ్ రీడ్ స్క్రిప్చర్స్, బికాస్ ద స్క్రిప్చర్స్ ఆఫ్ మోడర్న్ ఇండియా ఆర్ దోస్ విచ్ డీల్ విత్ ఫిజిక్స్ కంప్యూటర్ సైన్స్ మ్యాథ్స్ ఆల్ ది మోడర్న్ సైంటిఫిక్ దోస్ ఆర్ ది స్క్రిప్చర్స్. ఫ్రమ్ అ యంగ్ ఏజ్ చిల్డ్రన్ ఆర్ టాట్ టు రీడ్ దోస్ లిటరేచర్స్ రాదర్ దెన్ సమ్ స్క్రిప్చర్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ టాకింగ్ అబౌట్ ది సుప్రీం పర్సనాలిటీ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ హెడ్. అండ్ ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ సంబడి హ్యాస్ ఎన్ ఇంక్లినేషన్ బట్ దెర్ ఈజ్ వన్ బిగ్ బ్యారియర్ దట్ ఈస్ ద లాంగ్వేజ్ ఆఫ్ సంస్కృత్ బికాస్ నాట్ ఎవ్రీబడి స్టడీస్ ది లాంగ్వేజ్ ఆఫ్ సంస్కృత్. సో ఇఫ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఆల్ లాక్డ్ బిహైండ్ దిస్ పర్టిక్యులర్ బ్యారియర్ ఆఫ్ సంస్కృత్ సో ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ సంబడి హ్యాస్ సమ్ ఇంక్లినేషన్ హీ కెనాట్ రీడ్ దిస్. అండ్ ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ సంబడి హ్యాస్ ది ఇంక్లినేషన్ హీ హ్యాస్ స్టడీడ్ సంస్కృత్ బట్ దిస్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ స్క్రిప్చర్స్ దే ఆర్ నాట్ ఈజీలీ అవైలబుల్ లైక్ వీ హ్యావ్ అండర్స్టూడ్ వీ హ్యావ్ హర్డ్ హౌ భక్తి ఫార్ భక్తి వినోద్ ఠాకూర్ ఇట్ వాజ్ అ వెరీ బిగ్ టాస్క్ టు ఫైండ్ వన్ కాపీ ఆఫ్ చైతన్య చరితామృత. హీ హ్యాడ్ టు సర్చ్ ఫార్ ఇయర్స్ బిఫోర్ హీ కుడ్ గెట్ వన్ కాపీ ఆఫ్ చైతన్య చరితామృత. సో ఇన్ కన్సిడరింగ్ ఆల్ దిస్ సినారియో ది ది వాట్ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్ హ్యాస్ డన్ హీ హ్యాస్ మేడ్ ఇట్ వెరీ యాక్సెసిబుల్ ఇన్ ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ బుక్స్ ప్రింటెడ్ బై పబ్లిష్డ్ బై భక్తి వేదాంత బుక్ ట్రస్ట్ ఇన్ సో మెనీ న్యూమరస్ లాంగ్వేజెస్ అక్రాస్ ది వరల్డ్. దెన్ మోస్ట్ ఇంపార్టెంట్లీ హీ హ్యాస్ క్రియేటెడ్ దిస్ స్పిరిచువల్ ఎంబసీస్ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీ పార్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది వరల్డ్ ఇన్ ద ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ టెంపుల్స్. దీస్ ఆర్ స్పిరిచువల్ ఎంబసీస్, దీస్ ఆర్ ది ఎంబసీస్ ఆఫ్ ది స్పిరిచువల్ వరల్డ్ ఇన్ దిస్ మటీరియల్ వరల్డ్. Like today, devotees have put up such a nice depiction of this pastime from Srila Prabhupada's Lilamrit. It's a wonderful pastime. Shri Radha Rasa Bihari, they first appeared during the bomb, this pandal at Cross Maidan in 1971. So they had the DTs, they brought them to Chowpatty Beach right here. And from here, they took them on a procession up to Cross Maidan Pandal in 1971. And the deities were worshipped there. After that, they were worshipped at this place, Akash Ganga apartment along the Marine Drive, where the devotees were temporarily staying till they got their permanent land. And there they had a very nice setup, a nice standard of deity worship. But then, Srila Prabhupada, we read, even before he went to the west, while he was staying at this place, Sumati Morarji's colony, you know, the Sindhya steamship colony, while he was staying there, it was near Juhu, he had seen this particular property where right now Radha Rasbihari temple stands, even before going to the west. And he had thought, I mean, even though it was at that time overgrown with all kinds of wild bushes and thorny trees, but still he had thought that this is a nice place to build a temple. I mean, nobody in their right minds in the early 1960s, when actually Mumbai ended beyond Bandra, or even beyond Dadar, there was nothing beyond that. It was all suburbs in early 1960s. At that time, nobody in their right mind would think that this particular place in some remote corner, at that time it was called remote, which is right now, you know, midtown, and there this particular place, it would be a nice place to build a temple and people would actually come. I mean, to put it in today's context, you know, if somebody is walking along the beach somewhere in, I would say, Gholwad or Kelwa, and walking along the beach, they feel, oh, this is a nice place. Let us buy this property of plot of land. It's something like that. Beyond Virar even. People can't even imagine. Who will go there to visit the temple? So Prabhupada had that foresight. Actually, His Holiness Satrup Das Goswami Maharaj writes a very fantastic line in the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. He writes that Prabhupada had this unique ability to convert spiritual energy into physical reality. When I read that line, it was so amazing. So, in 1971, the devotee Prabhupada actually paid a down payment, advance payment for this Juhu property, and he asked the devotees to start moving and stay on the land. We should stay on our land. That's how, even though it is just, we have just made a small advance payment, but still we should start staying on the land, so that our stake is, you know, our stake on the land, it becomes more strong. And then he told the devotees, okay, now you have to take the DTs also there. So devotees were wondering, there is no facility for us to stay, now we are taking the DTs, why? So Radha Ras Bihari, they arrived at ISKCON Hare Krishna Land Juhu on the laps of devotees. They were lying across the laps of devotees in taxi from Marine Drive to Juhu. And there was a small shed that was constructed which would even sway in the breeze. And the deities were there, and Prabhupada was prayed to the deities that please stay on this property. And I promise that I will construct a temple for you here, a gorgeous temple for you. And that is what we see right here today, devotees have constructed. And this is the magic magic is a word which falls too short actually, for what Prabhupada has done. It's an understatement. But still, this is what Prabhupada has created. That was the first objective which he describes in his 7 objectives for ISKCON. To create places of pilgrimage, to create places of worship where devotees and all the people of the world can come and practice Krishna consciousness. So this particular example of this episode of Juhu temple, where when there was nothing, he asked the Lord to come and he stayed. Please stay here and I will construct. And then we say how over a period of 6-7 years, this magnificent temple, which even today is one of the best temples, you know, like in terms of number of people visiting, in terms of the festivals that are celebrated, in all these perspectives, you know, one of the top temples in Mumbai, you know, that people visit. Especially if you tell Janmashtami, when you say Janmashtami, the first thing that strikes people's mind is Hare Krishna, Juhu. That's it. Janmashtami means in Hare Krishna land, Juhu. Everybody in Mumbai has been there for Janmashtami at least once. You must have gone many times. So I know devotees, they go all the way from South Mumbai to Juhu for Janmashtami. So this is what Prabhupada has created. He has made it accessible. He has made the whole thing accessible. The whole thing whereby anybody who is even slightly inclined, who has even the slightest desire to somehow, I know devotees who have had this desire to serve the Lord. You know, I know one devotee, before he became a devotee, he used to visit this Panaswadi Balaji temple. There is one Balaji temple close by. He used to visit the Phanaswadi Balaji temple, and in it's a Sri Vaishnav temple. So in the Sri Vaishnav tradition, when the deities bathe, when the deities are dressed, the darshan is open. It's an open, they do everything with the doors open. So the devotee would sit outside and he would watch. How they are bathing the deity, how they are dressing the deity, how they are nicely ornamenting the deity, they are putting flower garlands. And he would just think, is it possible that I can do this someday? I would like to serve the Lord like this. I would like to serve the Lord like this. He would think within his mind. And lo and behold, that devotee was one of the devotees involved in this today's Chandan Yatra Darshan. So, it's quite possible. So, we just have to make one small desire. And when we have that sincere desire, Srila Prabhupada, out of his causeless mercy, has made it so accessible that even if somebody has some desire, they will be somehow or the other connected to some ISKCON temple, and they will be actually sucked into this particular process of serving the Lord in a very personal way. When I heard for the first time, not only that, this devotee has his own deities at home. He has his own deities at home. He worships even at home. Plus he comes to temple, he does deity worship. Amazing person. When I heard his story, I was like, wow, this is amazing. So therefore, this has happened only because this particular, you know, we have Chaupati. Even this temple we know, it was the desire of Srila Prabhupada expressed on the steps of Bharati Vidya Bhavan. He expressed to Shyam Sundar Prabhu that we should have a temple somewhere in this area. He's standing on the steps of Bharati Vidya Bhavan, he just pointed his cane. And this exactly falls within that area. So when Srila Prabhupada has created all these ISKCON centers, just so that we can somehow, like I keep walking along this corridor, Gopalji, outside Gopalji Hall, and I see devotees, small kids, people just coming into the temple for darshan, and they are grinding chandan. You know, when we hear this pastime of Madhavendra Puri offering, going through so much hardship in order to get chandan for Gopal, we feel, oh, it was so tough back then. But now, because of Prabhupada's mercy, anybody can walk in and, okay, I want to grant chandan. They even don't know what actually, why this is kept here. Many times it happens, they don't know. Bas rakha hai, acha theek hai, chandan. Somehow they will use it for the Lord. So this is the, again, this word comes to my lips because of a want of some better word. And this is the magic that Prabhupada has created. It's a spiritual experience within this material world. So again, I would like to conclude with the words of Satyarup Das Goswami Maharaj. Prabhupada could convert spiritual energy into physical reality. And this particular spiritual energy in a physical form helps us to connect with Krishna for whatever desire we may have. And surely, slowly but surely, this particular connection with Krishna will take us back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So we are slightly over time. We won't take questions. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.